Neo-tangology. From my first steps as a student of tango to becoming a teacher. Written and presented by Graham Guy. Chapter 2, History. Part 1, The Origin of Tango. Tango is ubiquitous. It appears in films, in literature, in television series, and in art all over the world, although the accuracy of how it is depicted is variable at best. The imagery of tango is used on posters and calendars, and whenever Argentine tango features on a television competition show such as Strictly Come Dancing, known as Dancing with the Stars outside of the UK, the crowd go wild. There is something special about tango that draws people in. And even if the audience know nothing specific about dance, they know that tango is something a little different to most other dance styles. There is a mystique around it, and where there is mystery, there is intrigue and interest. Whenever you start talking about tango with anyone who does not dance it, you know that the sexiness of the dance will be the first thing they latch onto. The way it is usually portrayed in the media emphasizes the sensuality of the moves, and the closeness of the embrace reinforces this view. They have seen pictures and demonstrations of tango that focus on the passionate side of the dance, and they assume that all tango is like that to some degree, so they want to know about it, even if their natural British reticence makes them reluctant to ask. The use of stylized tango in film and television is common, as whenever a film director wants to represent passion or sensuality at all artistically in a film, the chances are that they will use a version of something that might loosely be called tango. The male leaders will be dressed in sharp black suits with crisp white shirts and highly polished shoes, and the female followers will at most be wearing backless dresses with long splits in the skirts, and frequently a lot less. This trope may well have started with the 1990 film Naked Tango, starring Vincent D'Onofrio and Matilda May, but this vision of the dancers set the tone for cinematic tango scenes ever since. Not many directors take the wardrobe decisions quite as far as Leonard Schrader did in that film, but the influence is there nonetheless in countless productions both on and off the screen. If you watch the film Take the Lead from 2006, the iconic tango scene where Antonia Banderas dances a powerful tango with Katia Vasilas is a pivotal moment in the plot. It plays heavily on the sexuality of the dance, and it sets the tone for the way that the rest of the cast come to see dancing as a whole. There are notable tango, or at least tango-adjacent, scenes in The Thomas Crown Affair, 1999, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, 2005, Scent of a Woman, also 2005, Moulin Rouge, 2001. I could go on, but it would take far too long to list every film containing tango here. But in most of those films, the tango is used to portray passion, sexual tension, or connection through confrontation, all of which have come to be associated with tango over the years. The popular belief that tango was first danced in the brothels of Buenos Aires in the late 19th century does nothing to dispel this seductive impression. And nor do the stories about it being banned by the Pope for being too sensual and seductive for public performance. Some say that the shape of the embrace was influenced by the man trying to stop the woman from picking his pocket during the dance, or that men would dance to prove their worth to prostitutes. But are any of these stories correct? Does tango really have such shady origins, or is there more to it than that? What do we really know about this dance? Where did it originate, and how did it gain this reputation? To find that out, we will have to take a look into the somewhat contested history of tango. It all began in the region spanning the Argentina-Uruguay border around Buenos Aires and Montevideo in the late 19th century. The details of exactly when and how tango started have long since been lost, as very little history ever gets written down as it's happening. And of course, there is no one still alive who was around back then to ask about it. But there are a few things that we can be reasonably certain are true, as much of the history of tango was passed down from maestro to student by word of mouth, and we can see what fits with what we do know and can verify about the world during that time period. There is little doubt that tango started to come into existence as a result of the Great European Immigration Wave to Argentina, as it was known, which began in approximately 1853 and continued into the early 20th century. This influx of migrants and speculators from Spain, Italy, and much of the rest of both Western and Eastern Europe merged with the local Argentine population, as well as the descendants of the African slaves who had been transported there in earlier times. They brought with them a wide range of cultural influences and entertainment traditions, which naturally all began to blend together as people moved into and around the crowded centre of Buenos Aires. Exactly how this blend turned into the tango we know now is something of a mystery, but there are certain things that can be inferred from what we do know of the history of the region. Tango most certainly did not appear all at once, and looking anything like it does now. At the beginning, there was no dance style of any type that was called tango, and most of the music played in the social events and gatherings was a fusion of European and African styles. This included the polka, flamenco, contradance, French rural dancing, and candombe, all of which contributed to the cultural melting pot that was the Buenos Aires social scene of the late 19th century. Argentina may have encouraged tens of thousands of people to migrate there to take advantage of the rich natural resources in the area, but once they'd finished the work for the day, there was little else for them to do, so they gathered together to play music, to eat, and to dance. Music was provided by whatever musicians were around at the time, and frequently included harps, drums, flutes, violins, or anything else that could be used to make a tune or keep a rhythm. The music was fast, lively, and energetic, and the dancing that went with it was all of those things and more. The slowest music may have been around 120 beats per minute, going all the way up to 200 beats per minute for the very fast pieces. Dancing at that time was a workout. The social gatherings became known as milongas, a word that today has two meanings. It's still what we call the place where people come to dance tango, but it also refers to a particular style or subset of tango music and dancing. The word itself reputedly comes from an old Brazilian-Portuguese term for angry or repetitive words, or maybe witchcraft, possibly referring to the heavy rhythmic African drum beats common to the music played at those gatherings. It may have been intended to be a disparaging term used by outsiders to describe what they heard, but the name was adopted by the dancers themselves and soon was the accepted way to refer to the gathering place for social get-togethers at the end of a long working day. Because most of the migrant population in Buenos Aires had travelled there for work, there were far more men than women in the region, and so it was only natural that men would end up dancing with other men far more often than they danced with women. Sometimes one would lead and the other follow, but they would also switch roles multiple times during a dance, alternating who was leading and who was following. With the tendency of men to turn anything into a competition, it's not hard to see how this role switching could turn into a game of challenges to see who could outwit the other first, or who could perform the most complex sequences. Street dancers do this even today, challenging each other to dance-offs to test their skills, and this competitive element could easily explain the myth that men used to dance together in the waiting rooms of brothels to attract the attention of the best prostitutes. The migration of workers continued, but by the early 20th century this had become a two-way flow, with people travelling back to Europe after having made, or failed to make, their fortunes, and more were travelling down to Argentina to find a new life. This continuing exchange of people brought in yet more musical influences and styles, and bands started to form to play the new music that came about as a result. This music tended to be slightly slower than the earlier beats, and when played by the Orquesta Típica of the region, it began to sound a lot more like what we would recognise today as traditional tango music. The Típica was the Latin American term for any band that played popular music, and had a reasonably consistent composition of piano, double bass, one or more bandoneons, and a string section with violins, violas, and cellos. This structure continues today in the way that tango orchestras are put together and is fundamental to the traditional tango sound. The slowing down of the music led to a change in the dance itself, and this is where what we now know as tango really started to emerge. The name tango was just another name for a closed gathering or social event, itself derived from a word, tambo, that had historically been used by the African slaves, but it soon became inextricably linked to this new dance style. Tango was not just a slower version of the earlier style that we now think of as milonga. It was a whole different approach to dancing. Where milonga required a regular beat, small steps, repetitive movements, and lots of energy, the new tango allowed for pauses, expression, changes in flow, and more. The scope for creativity was huge, and a wide variety of different tango styles began to appear throughout the region. They were all basically the same dance, but some forms would emphasize the close, upright hold of the milonga dancer, whereas others would develop long, extended steps to emphasize the stretched-out pace of the music. Some styles favoured a parallel chest-to-chest hold, and some had a more open V-shaped connection between leader and follower. Straight legs, bent legs, extended arms, compact frame, there were as many different styles as there were regions, and yet there was enough movement around the country that they were all still fundamentally tango. Tango music and tango dancing both continue to evolve, and the period from 1935 to the early 1950s has historically been described as the golden age of tango. If any tango dancer refers these days to traditional tango music, it is likely that they are referring to one of the recordings made in this period. Often scratchy and of poor sound quality, these recordings give us a window into what it must have been like to dance in Argentina in that time, and the flawed but wonderfully evocative sounds of the orchestras typica of those years can transport the listener back to the very beginnings of the evolution of tango. But tango did not stay in Argentina. Over the first few years of the 20th century, dancers left South America and took their skills to North America, Europe, and beyond, and tango began its journey into becoming the worldwide phenomenon that it is today. This journey, however, was not without its hazards and diversions. Paralleling an earlier reaction to the waltz, upper-class Parisian society decided that tango was too flirty and sensual for public dances, and dancing it was discouraged in society events. Furthermore, it was formally banned by Pope Gregory in 1913, and European tango looked to have reached an impasse. Tango dancers, however, had other ideas. By that time, it had become extremely popular throughout Italy, and so a group of dancers arranged a performance of tango, especially for the Pope, so they could ask him what the problem was with the dance. But they planned ahead, and after performing the most careful and respectful tango ever danced, Pope Gregory had to admit he could see nothing wrong with it and lifted the ban. Tango was back. The discouragement and disapproval from Parisian society fared little better. The problem with declaring something too flirty for polite society is that people immediately want to know what kind of flirty it could possibly be, and they want to try out this secret forbidden thing to see what all the fuss is about. Tango never went away, and soon was being danced by everyone. At around this time, in the first few years of the 20th century, there was also a move to incorporate tango into the ballroom dances alongside foxtrot, waltz, quickstep, and the others. Because of the regulated element to ballroom dancing and the need to be able to judge competence based on the execution of known steps, this resulted in the creation of two codified and regulated versions of tango: American ballroom tango and English ballroom tango, which eventually became known as international ballroom tango. These were specific dances in themselves that drew on the styles and steps of the tango that had come from Buenos Aires, but were more rigid in their interpretation and lacked the freedom of the original dance. If you have ever seen them performed, you will have seen that they share some roots with the tango danced in Argentina, but that they are unrelated to it in almost every way that matters. Choreographed, rigid, and staccato, the ballroom tango variants are a world away from the fluid and expressive tango we know and love. But the existence of ballroom tango was to play a crucial role in the history of tango in later decades, and without it, we may not have the dance scene that we do now. Early tango music was largely instrumental, and if singers were present, they were there for atmosphere rather than being the focus of the music. But all this began to change when, in 1917, Carlos Gardel released a track called Mi Noche Triste, and the age of the tango singer began. From that time, the role of the tango singer became more and more important, and bands began to base their identity on the singers as much as on the rest of the musicians playing. Records were released, performances were booked, and eventually the singers started to take center stage to the point where the audiences would stop and listen to the singers rather than continue dancing. With emphasis shifting to the vocalists, it allowed tango dancing to evolve and adapt once again. Dancers began to shape their movements around the lyrics, perhaps following the rise and fall of the singer's tone as they danced the verse, and then switching to follow the strings or the bandoneon for the chorus. The versatility of tango gave the singers and bands the opportunity for great creativity, and a wide range of different styles began to emerge. Tango looked as though it would be a permanent part of Argentine culture and would continue unchallenged around the world for a long time to come, But events in Argentina were about to take a dark turn, and tango was to face an upheaval that no one could have predicted. Argentina is a country with a long and turbulent political history, and in the mid-1950s there was a takeover by a military dictatorship. Typical for regimes of that type, they immediately banned all public gatherings, and so the ever-growing tango community found that milongas, social dances, practice sessions, and everything to do with the dance they loved was suddenly illegal. Tango effectively stopped, and whilst a few people continued to dance in smaller rooms and in their houses, the momentum was lost. This could have been the end for tango, at least in its original form. Although there was nothing stopping people from dancing in the privacy of their own homes, there were now very few places anywhere in Argentina where you could go to dance with others. Tango had met an impasse, and if it had not been for an unexpected turn of events almost 30 years later, we may not be talking about traditional tango now. We've now come to the part of the podcast where I talk about the bits that didn't really fit into the article itself and maybe add some extra information to it to help it make sense. And I suppose probably the thing to talk about for this one is history and researching something like the social history of tango and how difficult it actually is. Because if you think about it, very, very little of this kind of social history gets written down. I suppose we're lucky now, if lucky is the right word, in that everybody is documenting everything on Instagram and Facebook and other social media platforms. And so assuming that the data survives in some way and that we don't have a mass cyber attack that wipes it all out at some point, future historians will be able to look back at this and get a very, very accurate idea of what actually was going on. But back then, back in the late 19th, early 20th century, there was no social media, and people didn't really bother to write things down. I mean, why would you? You're miles away from home. You've got no way of communicating back with your family back in Spain or Italy or anywhere else in Europe, for that matter. You go out dancing every night, and okay, some of them might have written a diary, but why would you bother documenting how the music had progressed? You just, oh, it's new music. Oh, we like this. We like this. And so it sort of evolved without anybody ever actually putting any of it on paper. So when you're trying to research how the music and the social environment and the culture and the different people and the instruments and the climate and everything else all sort of merged together to make old folk dances and traditional dances from all over the world come into this thing which we now call tango, trying to unpick all of that is next to impossible. So you have to infer it from what's kind of going on around and from the few things that were written down. And obviously later on throughout that period, there were bits of film where you could see people doing performances of tango, and you could see little clips of milongas and social gatherings, so you kind of got the idea how it worked. You've also obviously got all the recordings of the music, so you can piece together the sequence of events and how the music evolved, and you can analyze the music and see what its origins, its components might have been. But it's very, very difficult to get a true flow. I suppose it's like sort of looking at a map, but looking at it through a piece of paper the same size as the map, but with only like four or five holes punched into it. You lay that on top of the map and you can see bits of the map, so you know where some things are, but you have no idea how to get from A to B. It's very, very difficult. So this goes some way to explain why the history of tango has tended to be a little bit contentious. You have to not just look at the stories, and remembering that obviously they were passed down by word of mouth and anecdotally and told as sort of jokes in the pub, that they've probably changed over time. And so you have to assess not just what is documented and what is talked about, but what's really plausible. And I think that's where stories like the men dancing with each other to win the affections of the ladies of the night in the brothels, and really falls down because, you know, you go to a brothel, it's not really about how well you dance, it's how much gold have you got in your pocket. And so it's an odd sort of thing that some of these stories get embellished and get this sort of romanticized version of themselves. But they just lose the plausibility. So you have to sort of distill all that lot out. I think a lot of tango historians have done a really, really good job of filtering this stuff out. But there are certain areas where they persist in taking the most salacious, the most implausible, the most, you know, tabloid version of the stories, and using that as the definitive history. And I think the ballroom world is actually probably guilty of that the worst. I recently read a history of the origins of tango written by some official ballroom historian, and it bore no relevance to anything that made, or no resemblance, should I say, to anything that made any kind of sense. So it's difficult sorting out all the various bits. So anyway, even harder, of course, is then to distill all that 100 years worth of stuff into 15 minutes of podcast. So really what I've just tried to do here, I'm not going into a deep dive into every single nuance and stage, but I've just tried to pick out the highlights. I hope it's useful, and I hope it gives you a sort of idea of the flow of tango through that early part of the 20th century up until 1950. And then kind of we'll be talking about what happened between 1950 and when tango came back, or 1955 and when tango came back in the next episode. But I hope it gives you some idea of how its history evolved and where this dance came from and why, perhaps, it is so intertwined with the cultural history of the region. Whenever I start looking at the history of tango, I always find it very funny that here we are talking about how wrong people can be with their ideas that tango is all very flirty and sensual. And actually, come on, guys, it's just a dance. And then you look back at its early years and you say even the Pope got it wrong and Parisian society got it wrong. And everybody thought that, you know, it was something more than it is. So maybe there is something about this dance. Maybe it's just because it starts very, very close and there's a lot of leg wrapping and all that kind of thing that goes on that just leads people to think that it's more than it is. But really, it is just a dance, and you can dance it with anyone. And it's take out all that rubbish about it being based on this and an analogue of that and representative of the other, and just go and enjoy the music and go and dance it, and you'll see what I mean. Well, thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. As always, I'd love to hear any feedback or comments that you might have. Please send me an email, graham@tangosynthesis.dance. I think there's information on how to get in touch on both neotangology.dance and tangosynthesis.dance, so there's no excuses, really. Anyway, next week I'll be back, and the subject will be the time when tango almost disappeared. So you'll hear a little bit about what happened during that period and hints about how it came back. Anyway, until then, keep dancing, look after yourselves, and enjoy the dance floor. Enjoy your tango. See you soon. This website and podcast are copyright 2017 to 2025 Graham Guy, all rights reserved. The Neotangology logo and the name Neotangology are trademarks of Graham Guy. All other trademarks mentioned on the website or in the podcast are the properties of their respective owners. No part of the content of the website or podcast may be reproduced in any form without written permission from the author. This podcast was recorded and produced at Hawthorne Studios in Biggin Hill.